14th day of the fourth month of the fourth year of the new millennium. 444, that's a master number, they say. Welcome to this mastering time, a time of resurrection, a time of renewal, growth, and birth. Humpbacks have been giving birth and they've been returning slowly back north, but even today on my boat I saw a mother and a baby calf to remind me of the glory and the intensity of the humpback whales here in Hawaii. Welcome, everybody, to another show. We have a special guest, the all-star guest of Dolphinville. Joan Ocean is back with us today. Welcome, Joan, back to the show.
Thank you.
we're going to have 2 hours of jam-packed information. Joan has got stacks of things here to share with us from the Dominican Republic, new information from the whales that she was with over the last couple of months, and also some updates on the contact, ET contact information coming up for the show. But Dolphinville, this is a place that we talk dolphin and play in the cyber waves, and consciousness and conscious intention is to expand into joy. We're gathering here to celebrate, and the dolphin pods are renewing our connection with the humans on a daily basis. And as we go into the waters and into our multidimensional realms, we feel them. We feel them all around us. They're reaching out in these Hawaii springtime rains and rainbows that seem to be pluming up new growth everywhere that we look. This has been the wettest season I've ever experienced in 7 years here, but it means that everything is green and just teeming with life. So welcome to that, and hopefully some of that new growth energy will be beaming out to you from this 19.5 degrees of latitude. Joan has been a very special guest. She's the one who kind of started off the Dolphinville radio series. And for those of you who don't know Joan, she is kind of the founder of Dolphinville in her spirit. Over 15 years ago, she came here to be a part of the ocean with the dolphins and has brought many, many people in her trail. She's a master of science in counseling psychology and also considered kind of a special shaman, author of 2 books published in 4 languages, Dolphin Connection, Interdimensional Ways of Living, and Dolphins Into the Future. She offers seminars, workshops, and retreats throughout the world in dolphin and whale communication, which is her specialty. Her organization is called Dolphin Connection, which she and Jean-Luc Bazzoli formed in 1984. It explores the advancement of human consciousness, biophysics, and spirituality by producing visionary films, books, art forms, and the ocean seminars that encourage friendship between people and ocean-swimming dolphins and whales. It's really quite a pleasure to be here on the Big Island with Joan. And this program being brought to you by Photon.net, our great sponsors. Photon.net is starting to make its way into the broadcasting of the internet world. We've got the WESAC Festival coming up in just a couple of few short weeks that Photon is hosting. If you're interested in the WESAC Festival, it's a yearly event held at Mount Shasta, hosted by Dr. Joshua Stone. It brings in some very, very high light beings. And you'll be able to participate, even if you're not there in the physical, you'll be there in the virtual, if you choose to be, on Photon Radio. Also, just a plug for Simone, a lovely singer who's got a show coming up here locally at the Kona Outdoor Circle this Saturday. Somebody who opened the Steve Rother presentation last week. Steve Rother and his light worker group is here. So we have a lot of really cool things that are going on here on the Big Island. The coolest thing I can think of right now is Joan Ocean, and here to share some remarkable new information about the whales. Thank you, Joan, for being here. It's great to have you back.
Thank you, Douglas. You speak so beautifully. I wish I could speak the way you do. It's really
I'm glad
nice.
You speak the way you do, because no one would be able to tell us apart.
That's true. Well, it's good to be with you again, and it's so great to have Randy here, our expert technician of Photon.net, and I'm really happy to be back in the studio and have this opportunity to share with my friends, really, all over the world, in the United States and elsewhere, on the mainland and in Hawaii. It's been a while since I've been able to speak to everyone this way. I have been busy. I've been away and traveling and all.
You should mention a few friends that are off-planet as well, but we'll get
into
that later.
Oh, yes, yes. Today, definitely. I want to share some of the stories about the whales, the humpback whales, the ones I love so much. And then in the second hour, I want to say more about our ET contacts and some of the latest occurrences with that. And it's really important. It's important that people understand what's happening now. Big changes, groups of people meeting together and making contact with our ET friends. It's a very exciting time.
Well, the humpbacks, as we all know, who have been listening to Joan and any of these shows or reading our information, are the great purveyors of information of planet Gaia. They have provided the linchpin to the other dimensional realms, and they are in themselves an alien species as far as we're concerned. They know so much, and they have so much to share. So it's great to be able to know that the humpbacks are a great lead-in to the more ET information. Hopefully there will be some sounds emanating from the background of some of the humpback whales that have been recorded here in the Big Island. And I'll cue in Randy on that sometime soon so we can hear some of these humpback sounds. Are we on?
It was on. You told me to turn it off.
Okay. All right. So without further ado, let's go ahead and move into the humpbacks of the Caribbean.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, when we go there, when we go to the Caribbean to meet with the humpback whales there, many more things happen than just contact with the whales. And I think that's partly what draws people to those gatherings, because we have contact on many levels. A little about those, just so people know, those who attend the seminar fly into the Dominican Republic in the Caribbean, and there we board a 90-foot catamaran, and most people stay for a week or maybe 2 weeks or 3 weeks, and we live on the catamaran for a week. And it's a very beautiful place that we go, very calm waters where the whales are birthing and mating. It's very calm and stable because the boat remains securely moored all week long. And, of course, there's no land in sight, which I just love. I
100
love
miles from the nearest land.
Yeah, it's really out there, and it's a big area. And they say 85% of the world's humpback whales migrate there. So
all of the world, not just the Atlantic one?
Yes.
Amazing.
So that's what the researchers have determined. But, yeah, when we're there, there's just ocean and whales and the sunshine and the sky, and it's beautiful. So it really is always a dream come true for me, because my dream is to be able to live with the whales. If I could do it, I would just jump in. I once read a book about that where somebody, like, attached a suction cup to a whale and traveled with it. And every time the whale dove, they disconnected and the whale went down, and then the whale would come back to them when it came back up, and they connected and they just swam with the whale so forever.
I remember that book. It was called Almost a Whale Rider, right?
No. Well, anyway, it turned out to be fictitious, but I might do that yet. But anyway, you know, when we get to where the whales are, to the place that we're going to moor the boat, the first thing we do there is a meditation and really a welcoming. We want to say hello to the whales and let them know we're there, and then tune in to them and receive back. And it's always very profound, because the whales respond and we become immersed in whale consciousness. And it's the anticipation, the excitement of being with them. And many times they're right around the boat where we are. They're all around the mooring there. It's an area about 25 square miles. So I would really like to share today, tonight, some of the whale experiences that we had there. And I could talk about this all day, so I'll try to limit myself to just certain stories. But be aware that as I'm sharing some of these stories, it's not only the information, but as the whales have said, the energy of the whales comes through. And so hopefully the people listening, all of you out there, will be able to experience, perhaps through these stories, being with the whales yourself and understanding what that feels like if you haven't had that opportunity yet. So you just will become a whale.
Breathe into that.
Right. Listening to them and knowing them and remembering that you do know them. So I wanted to share what happens to me, I think, every year when I first get there. I cry. So we arrive, you know, in the morning, and then we have a little lunch, and then we go out right away to be with the whales. And we go out in two zodiacs because there's about 20 people. And so we divide up into two zodiacs and go out to meet the whales. And we're wondering as we're going out, you know, will we meet juveniles or will we meet the singing type whales or maybe the racing, boisterous whales that are chasing each other, or the mom and baby pairs, of course, that we love, or the pregnant moms and their escorts. The mystery of who will we meet when we get out there is a big part of the excitement. And then we scan the surface, looking at the air spouting from the blowholes, and really decide which whales we want to approach. And each of the zodiacs goes to different whales, so there's only one group of people with each group of whales. So on this, the first day we went out there, I remember that we chose to be with a mom and baby that was nearby. And so we bring the boat alongside very carefully and watch how they react. And in this case, the mom keeps the baby right between the boat and her, so she wasn't shy about coming close to the boat and having the baby get to meet us. And when we see it's all right, then we gently, quietly go into the water in our snorkeling gear. And the whales are very interested in us. Sometimes you'll meet a whale that's maybe a new mother, and she's a little shy and not used to us. But in most cases, they're interested in us and curious.
We know the gray whales, for example, in Mexico have been bringing the baby whales, have been coming up to the fishermen down there for a number of years now. So this is a practice. Whales are becoming
right,
more and more friendly with people all over the world, different species now. Right. And
the whales and the dolphins had given us that message, really, that when the time of change was upon us, the whales and dolphins would come close to shore and make contact with people all around the world and really invite people into the ocean so that we can experience that reality and that other environment.
Liquid consciousness.
Yeah. So on this day, this baby is not too small. It looks like it's a January baby, probably about 6 or 7 weeks old. And so what we do, we just go in quietly, and then we float above them. And then the baby comes up for breaths of air, because the baby has to breathe every 6 minutes or so. And mom stays down below. And it's interesting, because everybody has kind of the same reaction. It's like, is it all right, Mom? Is it all right if we're with your baby? Is it okay with you? Because everyone, it really touches your heart. They're so thoughtful of the whales and would never want to do anything to disturb them. And it's always fine with the mom. She stays down there, and every so often she'll come up and spout loud and go back down again. And this first time, as always, the whale comes up, and usually it's with one of the big ones. So when the mom comes up, she looks right into my eye. She's right next to me. I could touch her if I wanted to, which we don't. We never touch them on purpose. And when that eye contact occurs, it is so deep and so profound. Instantly I know she knows everything about me. And I feel how much she loves me and loves humanity, the human race.
Unconditionally.
And with knowing exactly who we are, the greater part of who we are, the parts of ourselves we may not even recognize. She sees all of our galactic selves and our earthly selves.
compassion is infinite.
Yeah, the compassion. And then the tears just well up in me. And I know I'm always, I like, you know, you have your mask on, you've got your snorkel on, so I'm trying not to, like, sob too loudly. You don't want to, like, disturb anyone else. You know, there's other people having these great encounters, and I'm going, you know, and my body's kind of convulsing and all, but it's just so amazing to know that these wonderful beings that are huge, you know, 45, 50 feet long, and they have no fear at all. They look at you without fear. Their eyes do not blink. They gaze into your eyes, and it just touches me to the core. So I'm not alone, of course. I saw tears in the eyes of many people there, and that's always how it begins. And then, you know, we'll float above them maybe for 20 minutes or so, and then we get a little cool, so then we get back on the boat for a while, and then we get back in. And I remember that first day we were in and out with that mom and babe about 4 or 5 times. Just spent the whole morning with them, and it was really beautiful. So that's my beginning day. And then I, you know, it's an interesting thing that happens there, because we've learned that in the morning, every morning we do a meditation, we all hold hands in the circle, and then we go into our separate boats, but we start as one unit. And we found that we decide what we want, kind of. People say, well, today I want to see, you know, juveniles, or today I want to see a whale breach, or today I want to see tail flapping. And every time what we put out for, if everyone agrees and says, oh, yeah, that's what I want to see too, it happens, you know. So I remember the next time we went out, everyone wanted to hear the singers, the singing whales, because, you know, we have the hydrophone and you can hear them through that. It's the most beautiful music. There's so many whale sounds there. It's huge numbers of whales. And the sounds go all through your body.
It's shallow waters, too, so there's a reverberation off the coral beds, which probably also augment the sound, so it must be a sound chamber deluxe.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's only, the deepest is 60 feet, so you can see them all the time, whereas in Hawaii, I mean, the water's so clear here, and it's beautiful, and it's often very deep, so sometimes when they dive down here, we just have to wait on top till they decide to come back up again. But, yeah, we decided this day to ask for a singer. And, of course, a singer, you know, all the whales can make sounds, beautiful music to me. But some people doing whale research have made a separation between just regular whale sounds and singing sounds. And this singing sounds has more to do with certain phrases and choruses that they sing year after year, repeating them and always adding a new chorus each year.
This is a phenomenon. And for anybody who's not heard about this before, this is actual the truth. The whales have a song that every whale in the ocean knows, and then they also know that it changes from year to year. It's really a phenomenon that the scientists are astounded by.
Yeah, and actually I heard that last year the whale songs changed. They started an entirely new cycle. So I found that very fascinating, because we know we also are in a new cycle now. So our group asked for a good encounter with a singing whale, and it was kind of a quiet time. We didn't see a lot of spouts that day, and we could hear the singing when we were in the water, but not very loud, you know, so then you can judge whether you're next to a whale or they're not too close. But we did see then a lone whale come up, and that's usually an indicator. It could be a singer, because they're usually all by themselves, just one whale. And this lone whale would come up and spout every so often, and he would move to a different location, then he'd come up and spout again. So we kind of had to take some time to tune in and get the feeling for the whale and to locate him. And I went in the water and I was swimming around, and then from under the water, from floating there, I could see him down beneath. And so I signaled to the group, you know, I said, there, he's down beneath. And of course, you're looking down. The water was kind of churned up, so it was kind of a misty, water-diffused pink peck fin, you know, because you see this white pec fin, and you're going, is that a piece of coral or is that the whale, you know? And then that wonderful feeling inside when it is a whale, it is, you know.
It moves.
And then, of course, the sounds were growing louder and louder. So I knew this was the whale that I wanted to be with. And I you know, signaled to the group, and then they came in. And by the time they got there, he had moved on, you know. So it was an interesting experience because I'd never really seen this. In the past, I had always observed singers with their head down facing the sand and their tails up, and they stay in one place, and they sing and sing and sing into the earth, which, you know, may be healing the earth or, you know, we don't know exactly. But this one was swimming and singing and then stopping and singing too. So then my friend Lisa Denning, who lives here, she spotted the whale beneath, and again, this whale was stationary. And so we swam over, and we were listening to this ongoing song. And while I was floating there and looking at the body of the whale facing down, and his tail was like right in front of my face, well, I just kind of imagined being this whale singing to the earth, and you know, I kind of put my body in the same position it was in and tried to feel what that was feeling like. And like, what was he saying? Was he like communicating about his trip to the Dominican Republic and letting all the whales know what was going on? Or was he healing the earth? He seemed to be picking like very specific places to stop on the ocean floor and to sound. And then what came into my mind all of a sudden was I thought about the inner earth and the inner earth people who live there. And I'm not sure if I thought of that or if the whale was telling me that, and the whale sent that idea into my mind. That often happens with the dolphins and whales. You might think it's your idea, but it may be coming from them. And then I could imagine that the inner earth beings would be down there, and they'd be hearing like celestial music coming out of their heavens, out of their sky.
Like a speakerphone.
Yeah, and maybe they were wondering, what is that beautiful sound? Or maybe they knew very well that it's the whales, and maybe the whales were their friends and residents even in the waterways.
Could have been Harry Belafonte for them, you know.
No, it couldn't.
Frank Sinatra, this is, you know, singing the popular whale song. It's Frank the Whale.
Have you ever seen that video, Willie the Operatic Whale?
No,
it's
I
a
haven't.
Very good one. It's a cartoon, but it's good. Anyway, so I could just kind of picture this whale going in like at the North or South Pole and going into the inner earth waterways and swimming around there too. But the thing is that it's such an example of how the whales always seem to open our minds to greater realities and greater possibilities. So you're out there and you just think you're floating and looking, and you're looking at every piece of that whale, you know, every barnacle, every little mark on it, everything about it, if it has its eye open, closed, where, how it's positioned. And meanwhile, all this information is coming in that's really beautiful. And you know, when we go on this trip, when we go onto this Caribbean whale seminar, I encourage people to try and experiment while they're there. To try and erase or ignore their previous schooling and beliefs about everything they see and feel. And to give up all the old ways of labeling things. And try to experience everything that they're seeing and everything that's happening in a new way. You know, just like they're naive, they're in a new world. Which
the eyes of a child.
Yeah. Yeah, through the eyes of a child. And it is a new world. Most of the people coming, it's the first time they've had that experience. But it's really fascinating when you start to do this, because it just clears your mind and leaves it blank so that you can receive universal wisdom. And in this setting where the water is so pure and there's nothing else around but us, it's very possible. And so during the week, the weeks that we're there, we identify things that we see in our experiences with new names and a lot of what ifs and maybe it means and sharing with each other and letting our minds open. And along with that, we agree, like, not to criticize or judge the ideas of other people. You know, you don't want someone saying, oh, no, well, I heard in my science class that that's not true and this. So we kind of, just for that week or just for that time, decide not to make judgment on anything that's said, and especially on ourselves. Because, you know, sometimes people, ourselves, we might doubt the messages that we receive, or the images or the pictures in our minds and things like that. So to even love ourselves enough to value what we're saying and thinking. So on this trip, no putting yourself down and just being open. And whatever anyone says is listened to thoughtfully and respectfully. And it's actually very freeing to do this. Well, while I was floating out there with this singing humpback, I thought about the inner earth, where the people seemed to know about the surface dwellers. And then my mind kind of expanded into the skies of our civilization on earth. And could we, on our planet, also be an inner earth? You know, was there maybe another planetary crust far beyond our solar system, far beyond anything our telescopes could see? And maybe we were enclosed in that. Maybe it was part of one of the many parallel universes. Well, soon my mind returned to the sounds of the whales, and I wanted to just be quiet and listen. I think the whale was telling me that, too. Just be quiet and listen.
Don't think so much.
And still your mind and remain open. And then I did get the message from the whale that said, you will find the answers within your body. So I just became very quiet and feeling these deep sounds followed by high squeaky sounds as well as making the same group of sounds over and over. And he seemed oblivious, really, to all of us floating above him. His eyes were closed and he was just intent on what he was doing. But then I heard his communication. And what I felt inside me and put into words was, as above, so below. The earth is physical matter like your body and composed of the elements of your body. If you have any questions about how our sounds affect the earth, go within. Go into your body. And so I settled down and again mimicking the position of the whale and the body of the whale. And then I felt the vibrations going up my spine and resonating it. And then the next tones the whale made were pulsing my temples and my crown chakra. And after only a little while, I felt like I became the singing whale. And I was just vibrating energy. That's all I was, and that's all I am. And the whale and I became one. And I moved into a state of bliss. And as you know, in that state, all questions are meaningless. They just fall away. And I'm one with the sounds and the beauty of the earth. The whale's connection to the earth is so deep and so filled with love. And you feel this great peace. So really, what else is there? Yeah.
Thanks for coming to the show today.
You're welcome. So we spent all morning with this lone singing adult whale. And it was wonderful to swim so much, to exercise and merge, because, as I said, he kept moving from place to place, and we just swam along. He didn't go far. And the exercise seems a part of it. I've often felt that.
This is new, though, I mean, to do this particular procedure.
Yeah.
It's first year for that, right?
Yeah. And we did a lot of swimming this year because the whales just stayed with us, and would just, it's almost as though they knew our limitations for swimming, and so they would just go a short distance and wait for us. So, and the experience of swimming and being in a meditative space, mm-hmm. it's like a moving meditation with the exercise.
So often yoga is associated with meditation. Your body is, your respiration changes, blood flow changes. You pump yourself up so that your mental and your physical capacity is starting to function at a very high level. That allows the spirit and consciousness to function at a higher level too. That's what all the yogis say anyway.
Yeah, yeah. And of course the breathing, you know, the whales and dolphins with their deep breathing, just if you mimic their breathing, it puts you into an expanded state of awareness very quickly. So the next day when we went out, we then decided, well, now we were ready to meet what we call the rowdy group, which sometimes when you see a group of these whales chasing each other, sometimes it's referred to as a heat run. And, you know, it's usually males, mostly all males. Sometimes there's a female in front of them or luring them on. Sometimes there's even a baby in the midst of it. The mom might have had a baby, and now she's come into estrus, and she's ready to mate again. And the babies seem very comfortable with it. They don't seem worried at all. But the male whales are like competing and showing off. And interestingly, you know, even though they're racing around after each other in this very dramatic way, it's later, when it's time for the mating, or the mating ritual anyway, because we've never seen them actually mating, not the humpbacks, but the mating ritual, the whales help each other. Like, evidently one male will be the chosen one, and the others will assist and participate in this beautiful dance together. So we're out there now in this little zodiac with this powerful rowdy group that's totally wild, you know. And the captain is on our zodiac. He's really good. He's been with the whales for so many years now. He knows them, and he's keeping pace with them. And they're just going like a train, really fast across the surface of the ocean. Five big ones on this day, and they're charging each other too. And they're getting bloody. They do shed blood. They'd never hurt each other seriously, but as you know, Douglas,
the barnacles, really cut the skin. Yeah.
All right. So they're just coming back and forth, diving, coming up all around our boat. They're so close we could reach out and touch them if we wanted to, but we don't.
The water must be just churning.
Oh, my gosh. And I'm just to make people, you know, just to make it more exciting, I'm going, hold on, here comes another one. Watch out, here comes this one. They're coming up underneath us now, you know. And everybody's looking this way and that way, and people have all put aside their cameras. They don't even bother anymore. There's too much activity, too much action. And so then they're trumpeting too, you know. They when they really want to make a loud sound out of their blowhole, they let a little water in there purposely, or it just gets in when they're charging around, and then blow, and it makes this, it sounds like an elephant, only louder, you know. So they're just all around us making this noise and splashing, and the ocean is churning, and their tails are slashing, and they're just making these big waves as they're charging across the surface. And then, you know, you experience this. It's like 20 minutes and our boat's keeping up with them and we're going around and circling. And then all of a sudden, they go down. It's total quiet. Total quiet, you know. And it's like, what happened? So when they get quiet like that, then we can go in the water and look down and see what they're doing. And when you look down, here's these same whales. Now they're swimming side by side, and they're even doing some spiraling dances together.
Having a couple cigars, you know.
Oh, yeah. Having a cigarette. No. and they're just totally quiet, you know. And then in a little while, everything erupts again. It actually makes me think of, like, you go to your corners or something and get a rest, and then you come back out, the bell sound. And then we're all energized by their tumultuous actions and interactions and our zodiac spinning around.
Bell sound.
So, hey. Ooh, the crop circle. Yep, maybe that's it. Time to get out there on the floor and get to what needs being done. Well, anyway, so we stay with these rowdy ones all morning, and they're just beautiful to watch and so powerful. And, you know, both ways, both when they're chasing each other on the surface and when they're being quiet down below. And then when we are watching them, when we're floating above them, and they'll come toward us, and this happens just continuously. I mean, they have the whole big bank out there, the whole big ocean, but they turn and they start to come up toward us imperceptibly. We don't even realize, you know, here's they're huge, and yet the tail's not moving, nothing's moving, but all of a sudden we realize that their head seems to be getting larger and larger because they're coming closer and closer. And soon they're like within 5 feet, you know, right there. And what we do, my group of people, we all hold hands in a line. And people like that, especially in the beginning, because, you know, sometimes it's their first time in the water with the whales. And so they feel a little safer just all holding hands until they see that there's nothing to fear. And so when we're all holding in a long line like this, we call this the line of power. We say, okay, form the line of power. And it's a little different to maneuver in the line of power than it is when you're swimming by yourself. Because sometimes there are waves out there, and the waves are kind of smacking us around and filling our snorkels with water, and you're holding hands with someone else. You don't really have access to clear things if you need it. Sometimes the waves actually start pushing you forward where you don't want to go, you know, and there's a whole line of people. We're like a whale, you know, ourselves, and the whale's coming toward us, and we're being respectful, and we're holding back, and next thing you know, this whale has pushed our whole line right above them, right over their head, you know. Oh, no, here she comes, you know. But we don't really ever worry because the whale is so aware of our presence. And so, you know, these whales turned very gently and went by, and we didn't have to be concerned about that at all. In fact, I tell people when they go to just pretend you're a piece of seaweed, and if the whale does come right under you, don't start kicking and backing up, because you might hurt the whale, you might hurt yourself. Just stay in one place, the whale knows where you are, and if the whale comes up under you, then just roll off. You know, just gently roll off the back of the whale as if you were a piece of seaweed. So we're all there, you know, out there in our line of power. And the captains later say that it was really comical to see how we looked, watching the whales all come up and we're all holding hands. And one of the captains said that we look like an accordion. They said, first we're squeezed together by a huge wave and then we're stretched out again, you know, all our arms all the way out. And I know one time a wave, you know, took us right past the whales. Now we're hanging there and we're facing nothing. You know, the whale is behind us. And we're all in our line and looking at each other like, well, where's the whale, you know?
Where's
and
the
so
power?
We had to try to figure out how to turn around as a line. Anyway, we let go of hands at that point, turned around, and we're in position again. So that was good. But you know, when the whales come up like that, and I know one time this one giant whale was coming right toward me and staring into my eyes, you know, just like a dolphin does. You know, we see the dolphins do that all the time, but a huge dolphin. And I just was caught up in his gaze and just began swimming side by side and holding the contact. And we just swam together for the longest time. It's so beautiful, eye to eye, heart to heart, swimming on the surface in the ocean that we both love. The whales love the ocean so much, and I love the ocean.
And it is entirely their choice to do this.
Yeah. I mean, they could swim away in a minute, you know.
Easily.
And they're just staying just pacing me so that we have eye contact that whole time. And it's just like a precious moment, a moment out of time. And we're together, and we're appreciating each other. And we're just exchanging frequencies of love and deep understanding. So those are the moments that just stay with you forever. And then after that whole thing happened, then the captain on our other Zodiac called us. And he said, oh, we've got a great mom and baby over here. You know, why don't you come over here and meet these? So we brought our Zodiac over there, and the other Zodiac, the people got out of the water. They were ready to have some time in the sun and let us visit with those whales. So at first we didn't even want to go. I mean, it's amazing because we were so blissed out from the big rowdy group and floating above them and all. But then, oh, well, okay, you know, it's 4:30 in the afternoon. You know, put our gear back on and get in. And, oh, it was such a great encounter again, because here this baby was so curious and so precocious and just coming up and being with us and rolling over. And it was a little male whale. And we really got great footage of
this. How can you tell the difference with a baby? I mean, it's obvious, the underneath.
Yeah, the males don't have the hemispherical lobe that the females have. So they're kind of just very flat on their underside. And this baby, it's easy with the babies because they roll over a lot. So you can tell if it's a male or a female. So, you know, we got back that night in time for sunset. And it was a beautiful one, as always, out there. And, you know, people are just blissed out. I mean, you're just kind of whispering to each other, not too much to say. It was very full and very satisfying. And you know, these baby whales, like, they've been among swimmers, you know. They've grown up with them. You know, they give birth and then they come back as adults, and they're really comfortable with people.
And you're saying 80% of the world's humpbacks come to this area, so they're resonating with, you know, the largest group of humpbacks on the planet are resonating with specific human beings. So there's a human-whale connection point that is very, very real.
Yeah.
It's also dynamic here because, as we know, that the whales come here to Hawaii, and there is a human pod of people, growing numbers of people who not only go out on the boats from Maui and so on, it's a burgeoning industry here on the Big Island as well, but the rapport seems to be really, really increasing between whales and humans. It's great to see.
Yeah, yeah.
So what else happened?
Well, let's see. What other story? Oh, I know. I can't forget to talk about, I think my most wonderful experience of all happened unexpectedly on a day when I just decided to take a day off and let the groups go out to see the whales without me. So I stayed on the big boat, you know, a beautiful sunny day. I'm on a nice chaise lounge on the deck, you know, my feet up. I'm reading a book, showered, you know, feeling good. I was happy to have some time alone, really. And as I'm sitting there on the deck, I hear this whistle from out in the ocean. I look and I see, and there's one of the zodiacs are far out, and the captain is whistling, and he's signaling to me. So I think, what's he whistling to me for? Maybe he needs something, or I have to help him with something. No, he's pointing in the water right near the boat, you know, pointing. So right away I knew, well, it must be a whale. There must be a whale right near my boat where I am. So I ran down to the lower deck, and I'm looking around. I can't see any whale, and then all of a sudden, right at my feet, right where I'm standing, this spout comes right up, right at my feet, going right by there, the whale. I could have jumped on its back if it was that close. So I dropped everything, my book, everything. I throw off my sundress, grab my gear, you know. I had my bathing suit on already, of course. I always have that on. And I'm putting my gear on, and now the whale, of course, is moving on, going beyond the stern of the boat there and moving away fast. And so I start swimming, and I have to kind of power to reach her, you know. And I'm about to give up. I thought, oh, I've missed her. You know, she swam away, and I don't think I can catch up. She's moving. And I was just about to give up, and then I see again that white fluke, or the backside of the fluke. It was the tail in the distance below. And so I just keep going and swimming strong, you know, to catch up. And you feel great out there on the water. And then I saw her. There she is, you know. And it was a mom and a baby, too. I hadn't seen the baby at first. So they're quiet. They're really quiet, and they're barely moving. So when I see that, then right away I slow down, and I mimic their ambiance. You know, I mimic their mood and their feeling. And so I slow down, even though it means, you know, I can't quite catch up to them because they're off still ahead of me. But by swimming like that in that relaxed way, it's kind of interesting because somehow you can cover the distance slowly, little by little. You're getting closer and closer to them. And they just must be swimming really slowly. So now it was such a treat for me, of course, because I didn't have anybody to take care of or no group or anything, and there were no zodiacs around. It was just me and these whales all by ourselves. And I'm so at home in the ocean, so I'm feeling my whaleness and feeling my deep, deep connection to the blue world and moving softly, so softly. It's like tiptoeing into their consciousness. And I find I even start kicking differently with my fins. I'm kind of fluking like the tail of the whale, really deep, long, deep strokes to move forward. And I can feel it then. It's like they let me in. I could feel this field of energy surround me. And now I was in whale consciousness.
You described a similar thing with dolphins years ago. Now here it is, you're entering into whale consciousness through the same kind of portal.
Yeah, that's right. And the dolphins really taught me about that. You know, they prepared me for that, so I know. It's an interesting phenomena, like instead of swimming really, really fast, which is fine to do, like with the dolphins when they're in a playful mood and you want to go fast and dive and leap around and they're doing it and they like it. But if with the dolphins or whales, if they're swimming slowly, you change your way of swimming, and again, these deep strokes, and you still are able to be with them. And I'm not sure how that phenomenon works, if, like I said, they slow down. But it feels like this field of energy surrounds you, and now you easily glide into close proximity to
them. It's like an agreement. We talked about portals of entry into other dimensions. It's kind of a co-agreement between you and the whales, or you and the ETs, or you and the other dimensional beings that agree that your time and space will match up. Mm-hmm. So you're not really swimming faster or slower. Somehow you come into synchronization. And that's, I think, the portal, entry.
Yeah, that's right, because it is a portal, and it is that synchronization, the coming together. And you know how sometimes, like if you try to rush, you run out of time, but if you do things slowly, you have all the time you need. You move into this different frequency, and that's what's happening there. So now I'm right up next to the whales, and I think the mom she's probably about 48 feet long, and she's floating on my left side, and she's coming up. She's down the bottom, and she's coming up from the bottom. And, you know, again, all I can see is that she's getting closer and closer to me. No part of her body seems to be, you know, moving. She's not moving her pec fins or anything.
That's 80,000 pounds for anybody who's calculating.
So she's floating really well. So next thing you know, she's right there, and I just stare unblinking into her eyes like she does in mine. And then all of a sudden I notice this flash of white as her like 15-foot pectoral fin rays is starting to come up right next to me. You know, it's just kind of balancing her in the water, and it's big, you know. So I think I had a moment of concern right then, because, you know, I wondered, will her pec fin hit me? It's got those sharp barnacles on it and everything. But that quickly passed because, you know, she was so careful. And then I'm, you know, thinking, have I given her enough space? I don't want to crowd her. I don't want to interfere in her life. I don't want to interfere with anything, you know, that would disturb her in any way. And as I'm thinking that, and then this, you just hear her, and she comes in and says, "You can never crowd me. You can never interfere in my life. We are one. Your energy field and mine are the same." So I just felt the waves of love reaching out to me, and I'm just engulfed in it and surrounded by light.
Wow.
So since she did seem to pick up my concern that the waves might knock me into her, and I didn't want to knock into her, she did this unusual thing. Well, it's just a beautiful thing, really. She turned on her side to give me more space. It looked like she was giving me more space. So she turned on her side, so she pulled back a little bit. And now all I can see is her bulbous white belly. You know, it's huge, and it's bright, bright white in this blue water. And she's just maintaining that position. She's staying on a half turn so that her eye contact is still in contact with me. And she's just floating sideways. And it was
because,
like,
she can.
Yeah. I mean, why doesn't she sink? She's so big. But, you know, all I see, I can still picture it right now as I talk about it, was just blue and white, you know, the blue ocean all around, and this, the purest white I've ever seen. And then her eyes still looking at me, and in that position, you know, and I went sideways too, so we're kind of belly to belly, not touching, but I just go right into whale consciousness through her, her beautiful brown eyes, so much wisdom. And I just melt into it, and there's nothing else. So, you know, times like that, I think you even stop breathing. You don't need to breathe. You become an energy body, and you're receiving sustenance from the ocean. Mm. And the gentle waves, you know, the waves are around there kind of pushing me this way and that way, and yet we never lost eye contact. We just were in the waves together. And all the wisdom of the universe is downloading, downloading into me. And we drink it in, both of us, because it felt like she was totally enjoying it too. So it's like humanity and the whale nation coming together. A deep, profound renewal of ancient vows and our dedication to each other and to Gaia. The fulfillment of prophecy.
The microcosm meets the macrocosm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Shall we take a little...
Yeah. Okay, well, let's see. Okay, we could take a break now, and then I'll start into some of the ET information.
Yeah, I just think it would be time to listen to some whale sounds, maybe, and just allow ourselves just to kind of bask in the... deep, deep sounds. Now, these were recorded here in Hawaii, but let's just take a moment to think about some of these stories and feel ourselves in the water with the dolphins and the whales and the vastness of the macrocosm and microcosm meeting. We'll be back in a few. Here, off the coast of Kona, baby humpback whales. So that's something for your consciousness to absorb. We're talking with Joan Ocean here. She's been describing some of the marvelous stories of being with the whales in the Caribbean and how it's opened her up to the nature of the universe, going back to before all time and space, so to speak, in a place of all innocence, opening up to the all that is. The whales can do that for you. And when you're in that space, they kind of lead you into a multidimensional way of thinking. And you're not so confined to just a planetary consciousness. You can expand, as Joan was expanding her awareness, to encompass the universal galactic sensibility. And this is what the whale and dolphin experience naturally leads us into. Now, you had some interesting otherworldly kinds of encounters with what you were calling plasma ships, both in the Caribbean and back in Hawaii. Can you tell us about that?
Right, yeah. Yeah, well, you know, you've been there, Douglas, and you know what it's like there on the boat. And at night, we sit on the deck and watch the stars. And, of course, the sky is really huge there, you know, because the stars in every direction going all the way down to the horizon, to the ocean. And so there's so much to see. And we've had many sightings there. I mean, that's one of the reasons people come, besides the whales. They also want the contact with our extraterrestrial star beings. And yes, the whole topic of plasma ships have been very interesting because I think many people are aware of the type of UFOs that have been seen, you know, in movies and in magazines, the typical flying saucer kind of shape. But now, more and more, we are seeing plasma ships, which are organic, pulsating, light plasmas, really. And they are in the sky, and they are in the ocean. And a very well-documented case is that of Carlos Diaz in Mexico. He lives near Mexico City, and for 20 years he's been in contact with this plasma ship, and he has a video out. If anyone, I didn't bring it with me, but if anyone would like to buy his video about plasma ships, it's fascinating, and you can look it up. I'm sure his name would be on the website, Carlos Diaz.
At least there would be some access, perhaps, on an internet search engine. Carlos Diaz and plasma ships would come up with something, right?
Yeah, or if you can't find it, just write me. You know, email me, and I'll give you the more details on that. So I had heard about them, and I hadn't really experienced one personally that I was aware of. And again, I think our levels of awareness are increasing, and perhaps we've experienced all these things in the past without acknowledging them or identifying them. But in January, I had a seminar called Star Beings at Sky Ranch. And during that seminar, we were swimming with the dolphins, as usual, and we were in the water. And this one day, the dolphins were not coming over to our boat. They were staying in this one area and swimming back and forth and back and forth. This is very unusual, because usually they'll swim in a wider circle, and we can make contact with them easily. Well, people were waiting, and I thought, well, I'm just going to go over and see what's holding their interest over there. So I swam, it was maybe a half mile to where they were, and just enjoyed being with them, and they were staying there. So I finally looked up, and I signaled to everyone, you got to come over here. This is where the dolphins are, you know. Well, then I went back to swimming, and all of a sudden I saw this huge white mass. I mean, it was further than I could see in any direction. It was underwater, and it was this pulsating blob of light that was beautiful. And right away I realized this is where the dolphins were. They were within this light vehicle, and they were staying there, and the word plasma ship came right into my mind. And so I called to the people on the boat, and, you know, they couldn't hear me. They were kind of far away still, and I'm saying, it's a ship, it's a ship, come to the ship, you know. and we had the captain on that boat. He doesn't really know too
Jeff
much.
Letcher.
Talk
about Jeff. It's one of the top 10 dive shops in the world.
Oh, he is Jeff so great. Skywalker. He's so wonderful, and he has a great sense of humor, you know, but I don't know what he really thinks about some of our ET seminars on his boat, you know, because I think it's still a new idea to him, even though he reads Weekly World News, where all the truth that's worth printing is printed, you know, according to Men in Black, right? So. So anyway, so he heard what I was saying. He was watching me, and he heard. So he's telling everyone, ET ship at 12 o'clock, ET ship at 12 o'clock. And he told everyone to swim there. So, you know, I tell it this way because there's always a sense of humor with the ETs, with the dolphins. There's so much fun and joy. It's not a serious thing. It's a joyful thing.
Again, it's a childlike atmosphere. You enter into the portal with an innocence rather than some kind of paranoia.
Yeah,
you know, that
exactly.
Just closes it down faster than anything.
Yeah, just like, you know, when you're playing with the dolphins, they'll play with the plasma ship now. So, oh boy, that's all the group had to hear, and they were swimming on over. And it was very interesting because what happened within that ship. We could see the swimmers. We could see their heads above water. And we looked down, and you couldn't see their bodies at all. And the dolphin sounds, we could hear them within the ship. When they went outside of it, you couldn't hear them anymore. So we were very aware that we were experiencing multidimensional phenomena. It was, we were half in one dimension and half in another. And it was fine. You know, it wasn't anything scary or dangerous. It was beautiful. And the dolphins were there really keeping us in that space, circling round and round within it. And so all of us who were there got to experience that. Well, back to the Caribbean, when we were sitting there on that deck, all of a sudden one of the men, said, look, there's a plasma ship at the back of the boat. And so we're looking to see what was there, and we were kind of already open to this level of expectancy, because we had seen our favorite flashing light in the sky. In the sky, we get every year when we go, it's between Orion's Belt and Sirius, which are kind of close together at that time of year in the Caribbean sky, and there's this flashing light.
Is that different in the Hawaiian sky?
Yeah. It depends on where you are, time of day.
I mean a perspective between they're closer in the Caribbean than they are. Okay.
They move.
All right.
So anyway, this is a flashing light that we see every year, and it's like just about always at 9:45 even, or 9:30, 9:45, and it's in response to our request for a signal. And it looks like a flash bulb going off, and the old type of flash bulb camera is a bright flash, and it's stationary. And as you watch, it happens again, and it might be two times, might be three times, but it's always after we've asked for a signal. So we had already received that. And then, you know, this person saw this mass of white right behind the back of our boat. And right at that moment, we heard a whale spout. And so he's saying, there's a whale there, there's a whale. You know, and he's pointing to the ocean and saying, it's right there in the plasma ship, you know. and I'm looking, and I couldn't see, you know, I'm not sure what he was pointing out. And then it spouted again. And sure enough, he was right, because when it spouted, I could see it, because the white spume coming up from the blowhole against the black water in the night like that, you could see it very clearly. And it was right there next to our dive steps, and right in this white field of light that was just hovering there. It was actually just below the surface. And so all of us who were on the back deck, and some had gone to bed at this time, but those that were there, we all watched as the whale remained right within this huge white ship. So we just were very quiet and listened to the whales and experienced it. You know, it's interesting. You think, well, what are you going to do when you see something like that? And you just be with it. You know, you move into that space to be with it, and you give thanks because it is beautiful. It's very beautiful to see. And interestingly, the next morning, two of the captains who, again, you know, the captains, I mean, it's no accident I'm with the captains on any of these boats. You know, we're brought together and we're meant to be together, but you don't always think of them. You know, they're the captains, they're doing their job, and whatever group comes on their boat is okay with them, but they're not always into it. But two of the captains, Stu and Jean, both told me that they had seen yesterday, before our sighting, a shaft of white light coming out of the ocean, and this was just before we had dinner. It was right after sunset. And it was coming right up out of the ocean, and they were looking for me on the boat, and they couldn't find me, and they wanted me to see it, and they said it came out of the ocean and went all the way up to the sky, and they witnessed it. We had an amazing time this year because there were so many sightings by everyone. There's three boats out there. The Aggressor has a boat out there, and this Wind Dancer is out there, and then our boat too. And there's
the research vessels that have been given the rights to go there. They're the only ones that are allowed in this, you know, several hundred square miles of ocean. Right.
Right. Yeah. You have to have a permit, and otherwise you cannot be there. And they patrol that and watch that. But everyone was even calling our boat. It's like they knew why we were there for the contact. And mm-hmm. So other captains were calling and saying, "Do you see this? Do you see that?" You know. So anyway, that's a whole. a whole lot of more stories. But
yeah, well, indicative of an attunement also that's happening on a global basis, which is where we're leading with.
Yeah, that's right. And really, you know, it's a reflection of how open you are. You know, when a group comes together with the intention of having contact, they will have it. And it's so important. So it really occurs regularly now on our ET seminars. It's part also important to share what we see, you know, and as we share, then we each learn from that, and then it keeps growing, and we see more, and we experience more, and we share more, and that's the way it's meant to be, I'm sure of it, to use the power of the pod mind.
Do you wish that we show up?
Yes. Yes, I do wish that you show up, and yes, you already have shown up, and we're glad you're here. I'll be going to the X conference. I'll just mention that if anyone's in the Washington D.C. area, there's a conference happening this weekend. It has an opening dinner on Friday night, the 16th, and then it's all day Saturday and Sunday, the 17th and 18th.
Agent Mulder is hosting that one, right?
Yes, that's right. No, Douglas is kidding. In case you come looking for him, I would go for that reason.
Yeah.
Yes, they called it the X Conference, and it's really people coming from all over the world. The top researchers and experts in the field of ET contact and UFO sightings.
Well, let's hope they keep it light and have some fun, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, you can't help it. You know, we've got a lot of parties planned. So, but I'll be going to that. And then afterwards, I'm meeting with some friends there. You see, there have been ET contacts happening in little pockets around the world. And it's not being highly publicized because it's not something where you want to draw in large groups of people. And I've come to realize more and more, and I encourage everyone out there listening right now, that the importance of forming your own group and gathering regularly. And as you talk about the ETs and seek contact and read this, you know, do you wish that we say yes and say yes, that you will begin to have that contact. And you have to be a little patient at first. It's like, again, swimming with the dolphins and whales, you know. You don't get out of the water right away. You stay in there. And the contact happens. So I'll be meeting with a group of close friends in the Washington, D.C. area, 15 of us, to look at the next step in our contact processes.
And it's that time of year, renewal and new growth. Things are coming out all over. I think we're all looking to see what the next phase is of that we wish that they show up, and they're going to show up. They have been showing up for Joan.
Yeah. And, you know, just it's really important that, I mean, there's so many people here on this planet, the light workers, who are here for this purpose, to be ambassadors and to know the star beings and know that they're friendly, they're beneficial, they're assisting us to evolve into higher consciousness, assisting us really to grow as a species on Earth, assisting us to open to our galactic selves and our galactic wisdom. I'm in contact with a group of ETs that include the Arcturians and the Lyrans, and sometimes the Pleiadians and the Sirians are there, but they're really a group who are pioneers in interplanetary connections, and that's kind of their work, to work with us and assist us, and it's really part of the matrix of loving energy that's out there in the universe. And again, they often represent themselves as a unit. You know, they're not into physicality so much, so they're not given names. You know, we are this group and that group, and we on Earth like to give them names, but they see themselves in their oneness. And so you could say the Galactic Federation or Council or the United Star Nations or things like that. To represent all of those loving beings who are in contact with us now.
It's like humpbacks is a way to describe an energy, and a force that we come to recognize as whales. But what you're suggesting is that to label them is just our convenience, not necessarily theirs.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So I think many people have read the transmission from the ETs that circulated all around the world.
Yeah, there's a couple of lines that were pretty potent. And I don't know if people are familiar with the text. It came out last fall, and Joan reminded everybody to about it at that time. She even put it on her website, etfriends.com, under the heading ET Contact. One phrase that really stood out to me was one of the opening introduction phrases where it said, "To know the truth, one must face it without the filter of one's beliefs, however respectable they may be. A growing number of anonymous researchers of yours are exploring new knowledge paths and are getting very close to reality. Today, your civilization is flooded with an ocean of information." Interesting that she'd use an ocean of information.
Mm-hmm.
"Of which only a tiny part, the less upsetting one, is notably diffused." It goes on to talk about different ways of interpreting the experience of extraterrestrials. And it ends, the message ends with some poignant things. It says, "Why spread such a message among yourselves that we wish for you to show up? Translate and spread this message widely is what they're recommending. This action will affect your future. It is irreversible in a historical way as the scale of the millenniums. Otherwise, it will postpone a new opportunity to choose several years later, at least one in generation if it can survive." So they're giving us an opportunity now to make this choice. And if we do, thousands of ships, thousands of plasma ships or portals of entry will start to become activated, and we can be the architects of our own fate. Do you wish that we show up, was the question.
Right, and many people have read that, and again, as Douglas mentioned, I encourage you to read that entire transmission. As I mentioned previously, I received the information at the same time, and a number of different people did all around the world. I used the translation by John Aderman. It was very clear, very well done, very complete, and he has a group of people who are in contact regularly. It's interesting because this particular person, John Aderman, I'm in touch with his wife or his girlfriend, I guess she is his lady. And she said that right now that John has disappeared from his home. He's, of course, been in contact with the ETs for a long time. And she said they went to bed at night around 11, and when she woke up at 6:30 in the morning, the bed was empty and he wasn't there. And so she understood that he had been transported onto a ship. And so she was kind of disappointed. I think she wanted to go too. I was feeling left out, you know, and we're very human too, and to honor that also, and that's how she was feeling. And so she asked to be transported aboard the ship so she could see him. But it was a little disappointing for her because he was so focused. They evidently were teaching him how to pilot.
Well, first of all, they granted her the wish and took her in some form aboard the craft. Is that what you're saying?
That's right, yeah. They brought her there. And when she got there, he was, you know, instead of saying, "Oh, I'm so happy to see you, darling, I've missed you," because he was missing for a week, and she reported him missing to the police and all, you know, just thought she should do the right thing. But she knew where he was. And when she got there, he was focused on the work he was doing there. And to be a pilot on those ships, they pilot them through your mind and through your thoughts. And so you really need to be very focused, and it's very intense, and especially when you're just learning it. Because you can imagine I know myself and most of us, we have so many thoughts going through our minds, popping in and out all the time.
Chatter.
Yeah. So to really focus on that takes concentration, and it's really a tribute to him that he was chosen to do this. They evidently saw that he had what it would take to do that focus, but he really couldn't pay much attention to Eve, and he was busy with that. So I haven't talked with him. As far as I know, he's not back yet, but it could be, it occurred to me that it would be very wise plan to have people from Earth be on the ships that come in, and be able to speak easily and openly and with cross-cultural wisdom about the ETs that they are with. So I don't know, but perhaps that's what's going on. And I'm aware sometimes sharing these stories, it sounds like science fiction. You know, they beamed him, they took him up, and he's learning how to pilot the ship. But it's very real, and that's really what's going on.
Of course, science fiction of 10 years ago is the reality of today.
That's right. Yeah. Yes, exactly. I love those books. But so when that contact, do you wish that we show up? And, you know, we addressed that on the radio show back in January, and we did a meditation saying yes, those of us who were ready and wanted to. Well, some people reviewed that ET transmission, and they had some questions that they wanted to ask about it. So I thought that some of those writings and the responses from the ETs were really interesting. So I'd like to share some of that. And it's, well, I won't tell you all that. But anyway, so this is questions being asked of the Arcturians. And this friend asked, he wanted to know, you know, how many people had responded. He was asking the ETs, the Arcturians, how many people had responded and said yes. So, of course, the Arcturians said, well, you know, the response is multifaceted, but, you know, it wasn't widespread. I mean, not that many people on the planet received the message as yet. But among all those who have received it and have read it, he said, the Arcturian said, 46 to 51% were affirmative. And they said that there is a spectrum of uncertainty among people, which I understand because, you know, even our own ET group wanted to know more, and I respect that. And the Arcturian said, we are currently looking at this spectrum to ascertain how the uncertainty can be removed and clarity can be achieved. We do not wish to initiate contact on our own, but to initiate contact in response to a genuine call from you. Contact is an expression more of who you are than of who we are. To the degree that we can mirror for you the positive side of your image, we count your response as something we can act upon. So in other words, if we say yes, then they can come in. There aren't a particular numeric set of rules or guidelines that we use. We use the clarity of the image of your planet opening and welcoming. See, again, like the whales. It's as if, in relationship, you long for another. It's like when you long for another person in a relationship. At the point that you are ready to embrace the other, that other can appear in your life. Before that point, the other cannot appear. Since we are the other, we wait for your signal. But it's an energetic signal. Not a vote as you know it. It's a choice that you, as representatives of your kind on Earth, make. The more that make a coherent choice, the more that come together in gratitude to build the aspiration, the stronger our signal can be, the stronger we appear in your system. However, know that we are already here. We already love you and support you. So that was in response to that question, and I'd really like to share some other very good questions and answers that came up. Another question asked of the ET contact group was, I am wondering about us acknowledging that there is life on other planets or life outside of this Earth. In other words, you know, Earthlings acknowledging life. And the questioner went on, we still don't have, well, the general population still doesn't have that in their belief system, that life exists on other planets. And the ETs said, yes, it's true. And then they went on to say, there's life all around you. It's just not under the lamppost, as you would say. Life is not far away. It's not where you are looking. The real lesson is that you are surrounded by life, that you are a part of a larger system. Seeing some evidence of life in your physical system would have an effect, but mainly with intellectuals. It wouldn't actually touch the lives of the masses, you know, to see forms and ET beings. It would create discussion and then instant forgetfulness. What we wish is to validate the inner knowing of many people, to validate the ancient wisdom, to bring into the now your heritage, that which you once knew, that which you've forgotten. And so for this, to do this, we must work differently. We must work to allow the memory to surface. We must work to reduce the fear that that memory triggers, to reduce the hesitation inherent in the memory, in the knowledge, to improve the confidence of those who must now stand together with others, with those who have been alone for so long. And then we asked, so what is it that we have forgotten? And the Arcturian said, you have forgotten your heritage. You have forgotten your parents. You have forgotten your family and the brother and sister planets who grew up with you. So, I'd like to share.
Before,
yes?
I'm just curious about how the answers, were they coming to you as a, like a channeling when you say the Arcturian said? I mean, how did you get...
No, this is a group, this is from the group in France, the same group that meets with the... Do you wish that we show up and the Jean Ederman group?
Okay.
The fellow's name is Hugh Matlock, who is receiving this. Very wonderful person, very loving. He has a chat room, I believe. I see him doing question answers back and forth with people. So this one, this question was about, let's see. Oh, about whether or not there's an urgency to make contact. And the questioner was asking, it said, the Ederman message, do you wish that we show up, suggests that there's some urgency in ETs showing up to prevent something like a frequency fence being constructed or some alternative plan to prevent contact, and which might limit us in some way, and suggesting that there is an urgency. But then a lot of other literature from the lightworker community is saying that we are absorbing and integrating higher dimensional energies at an increasing rate, and that the prospects are looking very, very positive for us. So can you comment on this, what seems to be two different opinions? And their answer is, both processes are underway. We can't tell you what will happen because we don't know. Some perceive the infusion of energy and can't imagine a systemic collapse. Others look at current conditions and can't imagine a systemic shift. So they're saying some see the energy and don't think the system will collapse. Others see what's going on now, currently, and really don't know that the energy can be changed. And they said, we don't know. It unfolds as we speak. Continue here. They asked then, I understand that the light workers on the planet have been doing very well, and they've created an energy that supports the higher dimensional grid. This is the questioner asking this, to which we will move into eventually, and that it's part of the ascension program. And so asking the Arcturians, is that your understanding as well? And they say, yes. The grids are multidimensional. They interlace with the physical structure of the Earth by reflection. The Earth is a reflection of the angles, if you will, of the grid work. As the light workers use their process, use their techniques, use their minds and their hearts, they are imagining a new grid work, a new skeleton of the building. Think of a skyscraper, the iron girders going up. These form a skeleton on which the rest of the building can be constructed. So the grid work forms a skeleton along which physical reality can take place. This is all work that happens at the same time that physical reality evolves. So it sets the stage for the new construction. So in other words, they're saying that, you know, there's different realities going on side by side, but as we as light workers, as ET beings on Earth, create this reality that we choose, build it and construct it and work on it from our hearts and with love, that is setting the foundation for the world as we want it, you know, the advanced world into which we are ascending. There are always already interpenetrating dimensions. They've always been here, of course, all these dimensions. But what's new is the cooperation of beings within the Earth system in setting it up. So you see, now is the time we're ready on Earth to do it. And we are prepared to do it, and we're willing to do it. And so it can happen.
And critical mass of people who can hold the energy necessary to make this transformation seem to be in place as well.
Right.
So it's a delicate balance point, it seems,
yeah,
because it could go either way, and it has to be our choice in order to manifest this whole thing.
Yeah, that's
otherwise
right.
It doesn't matter, or
yeah,
it won't happen.
Yeah, and I think Gaia herself, the Earth herself, is transforming and evolving, and so we're experiencing that. It's like you could say the veil is so much thinner now. We're all having these experiences in our lives where we're so much deja vu all the time until we don't know, you know, what's the dream, what's the reality, as the saying goes. I'll be doing a couple of gatherings in July and August, workshops, the ones in the Azores that deal with the dolphins, the whales, and the ETs, because the Azores is an ET base, and we go there for a couple of weeks. And then in August is our annual ET contact seminar, and it's going to be very powerful this year. It's 2 weeks long, and we live at the ranch, and the description of it is on my website, really. But if anyone has an interest in any of this, I encourage you to come and convene with us. It's really a gathering of kindred souls.
Yeah, I can say from personal experience that over a two-week period, something else happens in the group consciousness. We come and start to move together as a pod mind with much more connectivity than you can ever imagine. After 1 week, we start to feel it. Now we take that and compound it. So the two-week venue, which is the only time you've ever done something that long, in my reckoning, is really, really powerful. The people who come together are really have an experience.
Yes, and we have contact, and again, I think I've mentioned this before, but I encourage people not to look at the old paradigms and expect it to be, you know, the ship's going to land, we're going to go up the gangplank and get aboard, you know. That can happen, and that has happened. But what we often experience is more to do with these plasma ships. This field of energy comes down and completely surrounds the group as we sit outside in a circle, and we're in it. We don't have to go anywhere because it's just another dimension, another reality. And as we move into that higher frequency through meditation and through the presence of the ship as it hovers above us, then we merge with it and we are in it. And we have had that experience now repeatedly. So, yeah, it's a wonderful gathering, and I love seeing all my friends show up there. And, of course, we swim with the dolphins and play and have lots of fun and laugh a lot.
Well, the key to the portal that we just spoke about earlier is it's a co-creation between ourselves and what's on the other side, so to speak, of the portal opening. Collective consciousness and intelligence that is non-human, that is saying, yes, you can. We can convene here. And just as the dolphins and whales have shown us, it is a co-creative process where both of our energies are required to create. And it is a plasma ship, in a manner of speaking. It's an organic form that is a combination of both of our reality matrices that make a third separate
that's right.
Condition.
We are it.
Yeah. So it's a combination. I think that's where the dolphins and whales and being in the ocean and having that experience as an augmentation to then going and sitting at the ranch or on the fire and having us go back into an ocean of consciousness and invite in that that other intelligence other than human.
Yeah, that's right. And it's really experiencing the feelings of love. You know, it's such a loving setting. And again, that's what the dolphins and whales have taught us. You know, we have experienced their love. We know what that's like. It's all-encompassing, and we recognize it. So when we have this experience with the plasma ship, when we have the channeling from the ETs, what comes through but love and deep peace, and we recognize it. We know what it is. There's never a question about who is it. You know, we feel the relationship. We know it's our relatives, and we're happy to meet with them.
And as a planetary consciousness, as we become more familiar with exactly what the meaning of unconditional love is, and we look to the great master teachings, we look to the, you know, the great avatars who have been on the planet, and all of them are leading to a frame of mind and a reference point, which is non-attachment to any outcomes and unconditional love as a state of being. And the dolphins and whales personify it, and now another opportunity to step into a portal of ET awareness that also is necessary. That's the ticket.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you word it so well. I love listening to you talk, Douglas. Oh, and you know, in that August one, I'm having a friend come also from New York City. New York City. He's a reporter there. He's been a reporter for over 20 years, and I won't mention his name right now, but he has ET contact groups in his home, and he's met with people, just opened his home to people who have had contact. And, you know, some people in the early days were frightened by it because they stood alone. You know, there was no one else who could relate to that. And, you know, the world was out there still ridiculing things like that and putting it down and trying to prevent it from coming into human minds. For 20 years, he's been with people who have had contact and has so much information to share. He's a very beautiful, loving soul, and he always reports every time there's a UFO sighting in New York City. He's a wonderful writer, and he writes the article about it, but the papers always reject it. And they still say, you know, only if you make fun of it will we allow it to be published. But he still puts it in anyway, submits it just in case, and then he puts it on his website instead. So
he used to play with the dolphins so he can make fun of it.
Yeah, he'll enjoy the dolphins. So he'll be coming to the August seminar. Well, let me just share a little bit more here. One of the questions, again, that was asked was, you know, kind of about how can I help? Because, you know, it always touches my heart. People who gather, they really, really want to be part of it. They really feel the love of the ETs. They love them. They love the star beings, the star children coming in now. And the fact that we're communicating with animals is so important, too. I never want to leave the animals out. It's a big part of it. The animals and the star beings are deeply connected. But people all want to know, well, how can I help? You know, what can I do? So this person was asking the question, and they said, I've always wanted to be part of this process. I always thought it was incredibly important, this communication with ETs. So what is this? Is there a role that we can play? What is this role, and how can we assist in this process? I've never seen an opening, really, to be able to do this, or I've never understood a way I could. And the answer is, yes, it is possible to play a role and to be part of this communication. There actually are many roles. Just living the good life is playing a role in this process. When you understand that, when you understand what the process really is, you will find the networks you have built, the friends that you have, and how you have treated them are some of the essential elements in the process. How you treat your friends, how you treat your loved ones, the qualities that you bring to your life, the qualities that you develop within yourself, these are the most telling things as time goes on. As you discover the importance of consciousness in the evolution of the planet, you realize that the work you do to clean up your own act, the work you do to discover your own truth, is the most important work. So then the questioner asked, so then the best way for us to participate is to examine our emotional state and be loving and caring, or is it something even more specific that we could do? And the Arcturians answered, yes, that's correct, but also creativity. Creativity is helpful, creative solutions. Imagining your future in a positive way and imagining yourself surrounded and grateful for having that future in the here and now. That's a big one. Imagine that there is no physical past and physical future. There is only a now. You should be quite accustomed to that because that is your reality. You always exist only in the now. And it is from that now that you can create new perceptions, new conditions. So the best thing you can do is create conditions that you want. Harmonious conditions that are right for you in your life right now. And from that life, that vision, you assess where you are now and if there is anything that needs to be put in place to have that environment, then that is what you are to do. So there's a lot more here, but reading that and remembering that, it again reminds me of our contacts with the dolphins and whales, where people have that contact and they're changed so much by it. And how are they changed? You know, they decide to move lots of times. Sometimes they move here to be with the dolphins and whales. They really start to examine their relationships. Are they happy in their relationships? They look at their health and their environments. Are they living close to nature? And then they decide to change. They feel the love, the unconditional love of the dolphins and whales, and it strengthens them, and they know they can create the exact reality they want. Doesn't have to be swimming with dolphins every day, but it is meant to be a life of great joy and happiness. And the more you experience that,
Yeah, joy is the key word that impressed upon me that when I first came here 7 years ago now, almost 7 years ago, was just how easy it was to feel happy and how complicated I had made my life to make it appear as if being happy was a difficult thing. So I kind of had to unravel all of that stuff and then recognize that, you know, as this joy just kind of bubbled up within me with the experience and that experiential awareness, then kind of tripped off a whole line of dominoes, so to speak, that, wait a minute, all of this was stuff that I had manifested around the idea of being happy rather than the actual act of being happy.
Yeah.
And that's what people do. They've built these structures around themselves, getting ready to be happy. I'm in preparation to be happy. It's like I see people in line, you know, I'm hurrying up to get there so I can relax. I mean, you can just melt into it and be there now. Wherever it is, that's where it is.
Yeah, yeah. And as it bubbles up like that, don't you find that you just love your friends so much? Like, I love our friends here. It's so wonderful. And all my friends, every place, in every country. You feel so close to them because you are close, but you're really feeling the oneness now. And as you know, we all come together to share our dreams and our vision, it manifests. And I feel so hopeful about all that and positive, too. It's I said something about the animals, and as you know, Douglas, I was having kind of a sad day today because I have a miniature horse that I love very much, and she was going to give birth, and she gave birth, and it was a stillborn, and the baby was just happened this morning actually, and it was very, very sad, and I gave the baby artificial respiration, did everything to bring her back. She actually was born, you know, stillborn. So there was nothing I could do. And, you know, I'm still wondering, what is that about? You know, why did that happen? But what was very interesting with that even was that the mother horse, the mother miniature horse, she's a registered horse named Classic Act. So I call her Classy. She and I became so close because every night I slept in the tent right next to her, because I know with these miniature horses, they have some difficulties with birth, and I wanted to be right there with her. And it was raining every night. This is kind of the rainy season. It was sunny during the day, but rainy at night. And we were all in the mud, and my tent sliding around, and you know, and I keep saying, "You all right?" And she's doing fine. She's putting her little nose over by my tent door and to see if I'm all right. And we became so close, and I just love her so much, and she's so wise, you know. And my other miniature horse, La Plume, was there for the birth, and when La Plume saw me, trying to blow the breath of life back into this baby that probably had been dead already for a couple of weeks within the womb. When I put the baby down, and then La Plume came over and started breathing air into the nostrils of the little fetus, and also doing the same thing, and I was so touched, and we had like a little ceremony and a service. And when I looked up, the wild horses from the hillside, which I see occasionally but not often, had all come all the way over to as close to my property as they could get, right up against the fence line, and were all standing in a line participating. And these are horses that if you move, they run, you know. And they didn't. They just stayed there to be part of it. And, you know, there's so much going on right now that is connecting me to nature, to the oneness, to the beauty of the animals, and I still will have a lot more to learn about what it's all about. It's interesting because I was talking to the elves at the ranch. We have the little people there, and they show themselves. They wear little brown robes and brown hats, capes, like, and there's a whole group of them, and I've talked about them before on the radio show. And I was kind of wondering about something that was going on there on the ranch, and I wanted an answer from them, and I don't know that I was approaching it in the most polite way. We had some winds in February. I was in the Dominican Republic, but when I came back, I was appalled to see that some of the trees on my ranch had gone down.
These are 40-foot ohia trees.
Yeah, even taller, yeah, very big. And they're sacred trees to the Hawaiian people. If ever there's a place where they're going to be cut down, you know, because of development, they will pick in and ask that they not be cut down. And they are very important trees. The elves have already told me that it's the trees that regulate the rain. And so if you have a drought, you speak to the trees and see, you know, what their purposes are and see if it's appropriate for rain to fall, and they can work with the clouds with that. But these trees fell down while I was away, four of them, and they just kind of, it looked like almost like a cyclone had hit. They fell in a spiral. And yet I had to notice that they didn't hit any of the buildings or any of the horses or donkeys out there. So I was very grateful about that. But always, for me, in my entire life, I try to find significance in everything and say, you know, what is the greater meaning of this? So I asked the elves, you know, why did these trees go down? And if you remember, Douglas, I had had a previous communication with the elves in which I found out that we had been piling rocks around the base of the trees, and so the elves asked me to take those away because they said that's where the trees breathe, is the area from where the earth is up a couple of feet, the lowest part of the trunk of the tree, and that's where the growth spurt would be, and would we take the rocks away so the trees could breathe. So I did that and, you know, found there was wire wrapped around some of the trees, and we had done all that. So the part of me, the human part of me, thought, oh, maybe I didn't do it fast enough or well enough, and oh my goodness, these trees had to go down. And no, I said that here. I was going to share what they said, actually, the elves. Well, anyway, it was very beautiful. No, I don't have it here, but they said, they did point out that nothing was injured. And also they said that the trees were old and it was time for them to come down and to really understand that things live and things die. And even though they were standing, these trees, they were really not living anymore. And then they said, it was also for me to see and to understand what high winds can do, that perhaps we'll be experiencing high winds, and was our house in order? Was everything prepared for that? It was amazing to me to see that these big trees, you know, they didn't break. Their roots came totally out of the ground. When I stand next to the roots, it's five, I'm 5 foot, it's 10 feet, it's above, way above my head, the roots, extending upward now toward the sky. So these were not even very strong winds, 50, 60 mile per hour, and the trees were uprooted. And then, just kind of as an afterthought, the elves said to me, oh, and by the way, they had noticed that we were running out of firewood for our outdoor fires whenever we do workshops. And they said, now you have plenty. So that was really it, and that's so much, you know, how they are. I mean, everything is provided for in a very profound way, and we don't always understand it. I don't always understand it rationally, but I'm getting it little by little.
Well, in this time of year, this time of resurrection, this time of renewal, rebirth, we always have to think in terms of what is ending in order for something to begin, because whenever something stops, something is beginning at the same time. Over the last several weeks, there's been some instances. Steve Rother's group was in here. Their practice during that week was something called transition teams, focusing on how to help people transition from one dimension to another. In other words, from living and passing on to death. Right before he came, there was a significant event to the Hawaiian people when one of their highly, highly respected elders was struck and killed in an automobile accident. Now, this was a very, very highly respected spiritual leader on the island, somebody whose lineage directly went back to the kings. And it was created a great reverberation within the spiritual community of the Hawaiian people. And I know that, so here's another example of how this is being presented to us. There is the other side of the living matrix, which is, what is it like to be non-living in the third dimensional context? Does life go on, and what kind of life is it? Hawaiians have a simple phrase by saying, you change addresses. And so what is living and dying together, and we're coming to a new understanding of these principles with our accelerated consciousness, with our new awareness and opening up to other life forms, we also have to open up to new ways of thinking about life and death. And is that veil really coming down? And are we ready to let go of the egoic tendency to hold on to life as if that is the only principle that exists? So I think you're getting lessons, I'm getting lessons, the world around us is all getting lessons, and of course, this time of year, after the deep, dark winter of death, snow covering everything now, out of the winter comes the spring and the renewal. So again, nature itself is a beautiful example of how these principles are at work. So I know that you're in a heartfelt space and how difficult and how much energy you put in to being on the land and wanting to foster a new birth. And maybe the new birth is there, but not in the way that we expected it. And just as we are asking for something new in our lives, a new consciousness, a new intelligence to come down, maybe we also have to let go of any restraints and expectations as to how that form should take in order to be really open.
All right. Yes. Thank you for bringing that up, really. Now I have a big lump in my throat. How am I going to talk? Yeah, it's so true. And everything we learn is very profound. And as I said, I'm not sure exactly how to explain it all, but eventually it does become clear. And I feel that many of us who have said yes to the ETs, heartfelt yes, you know, not just off the cuff kind of a thing, but really meaning it with great sincerity, are having changes in our lives now. We're moving so fast through things, amazing synchronicities. I think a lot of people can relate to this. It's like we keep showing up, people keep meeting each other. You go to some place you never go to normally, you know, some restaurant or some shop someplace, and somebody who was supposed to have left on a plane that you know really well is standing there, and they said, oh, I was just hoping to see you, I have something I have to tell you, and their plane had been canceled, and they were there, and they happened into the same shop as you were in, my dear friends in England that just happened with, and that's happening over and over again. So again, we are entering these different realities, these different ways of being, and learning to accept it. I'm always so impressed by how gently we're led through this. We're only given as much as we can handle. My little mini horse, Classy, you know, we mourned for about 6 hours, and then she was off and running. She's galloping around the field, you know. She's ready for her next adventure. And it was very inspiring to see her. And I understand that. You know, you mourn, you feel your feelings, love, and it's beautiful, and then you carry on. And to me, the contact with the ETs is such a big part of that. And I wanted to be sure and encourage people to go ahead and start these groups. You know, just like there are these small groups now where these contacts are happening, and just come together and review all the written information that's out there. There's so much there, and then develop your own means of communicating, make contact with the ETs, and then together as a group decide to say yes to the ETs landing on Earth, and just see what happens. And we'll all keep in touch with each other. So it's really a very enlightening process to see what happens.
I think that all of this that we've been talking about, dolphins, whales, ETs, the nature spirits, life, death, all of it is one grand, beautiful unfoldment and a higher way of thinking about existence and how existence transcends the mere limitations that we've been given, third dimensional life cycles that we were led to believe is the only thing that is going, and everything else is an unknown. So we're opening up to the unknown, and we're allowing the unknown to be part of our life as well. In other words, we're allowing new experiences to come in as whatever way that they have to come in. And that's part of the expansion process. If you hold on to a belief system, then you're not letting any room there for something new to come in. And so these great lessons that are coming about now, I think are part of that process of gradually helping us to let go. I let go of an old lifestyle that restricted my happiness and said, this is so easy to be happy. The dolphins show us. They live in this joy. And they demonstrate unconditional love.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And, you know, it's good, too, for people to you know, look deeply inside and really begin to, what kind of world do you want? How do you want it to be? Because that clarity is really important. I know I've been in contact with people who have been writing me and asking a lot of questions, and you know, really asking the ETs, well, what does it really mean having contact with you? And maybe they're proposing things such as, can we do like a 7-year kind of experience and see what that feels like, and then make a decision how much further we want to proceed and things like that. And again, I'm so moved by the gentleness of it. Here I'd like to share this that somebody wrote to the ETs, and this has been going back and forth, part of the back and forth with the contacts. And they said, after contact with you, ETs, this person is writing, we can anticipate that we will need a new foundation for our economy, one that reflects the system of values current in the interplanetary economy instead. And we can see that it is to our advantage to be able to function autonomously within this context as soon as we can. Of course, because of our isolated condition, we must be technically backward by the Galactic Council standards. While we are ignorant of what you might use as a process or medium of exchange, we know we must offer something that you value in order to receive much of what we will need in order to develop without undue dependency on you. We are quite pleased to read that you value joy and peace. Many of us here on Earth would delight in providing just those commodities to the Galactic Council. With this in mind, we would like to suggest that Earth establish an economy based on interplanetary tourism and peacemaking rather than any extractive industry. We would like to be known on Earth as a place of truth, peace, and beauty. This is the identity we feel would do the most to preserve what we love about our precious planet Earth, while also providing the basis for our economic and political independence. If you are in alignment with these goals, we are on board with you.
That's a wonderful way of stating it here in this political arena now, where we're getting ready for our local elections and presidential elections, is to think of politics on another level. And how would it be to be a galactic citizen where our commodity is our joy and our love, and not, as you say, some extracted piece of energy that puts us back into the 3D matrix. So.
Yeah.
Well, these 2 hours have kind of floated by here. We have covered a wide, wide range of things. I really appreciate your sharing the heartfelt story of the young one that came in with another lesson, the one that we weren't expecting.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, 2 hours have melted away, Joan.
Right. And it's been fun again.
Yeah.
It's been wonderful, and I look forward to talking some more and sharing some more.
Yeah.
And maybe I'll see some of my friends in Washington, D.C. on the weekend.
Yes, so once again, that's the X Conference that's coming up there that Joan will be attending this coming weekend.
Yes, Stephen Greer is there, and of course Richard Hoagland and Linda Moulton Howe. Steve Bassett is somebody I know. Scott Jones is a good friend of mine. Dr. Bruce Maccabee, Jim Mars. It's a great group of people. So perhaps I'll be able to share some of their insights on another Dolphinville radio broadcast.
Well, that'll be my pleasure, and hopefully the pleasure of our listeners, as we do invite you back. I think I'm going to just have you come back time and time again with
okay.
these updates. As you know, the format has changed a little bit here. We'll be doing shows instead of on Mondays, we'll be doing it on Wednesdays as a broadcast point. And just to make it easier for everybody. Joan, you have one more thing to say here?
I just wondered if we could mention my website address.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, thank you.
We've been talking about the ET contact, and most of that information is on Joan's website, etfriends.com. And, of course, you can access it from her own website, joanocean.com. We are on the cyberwaves here. We're broadcasting live on planet Gaia, and I know that these vibrations are reaching out beyond our atmosphere. hopefully being received on the moon, Mars, and beyond, and maybe even on the other side of the galaxy, as we have ways of getting there that we don't even know about yet. Thought does travel a lot faster than speed of sound and light. I appreciate your being here as always, Joan. I appreciate Randy for hosting with Photon.net. Once again, if you have been listening to the show and like what you hear, there's going to be some more very good information coming up on Photon Radio broadcasting the WESOC Festival, first week of May. You should be able to see that information posted on the Photon Radio page. If you're listening to this program, I assume you must know where that page is. If not, it's at photon.net, and just open that up, and you'll see the announcement and the hyperlinks to the radio show and radio program for WESAC. So look for that. Thanks again, Randy. Thank you for listening, and just wanted to let you know that we'll be back when we are, probably 2 weeks from today on Wednesday, and look forward to seeing you then. So this is Dolphin Us, and being with you. Be well and swim free. See you next time.
Bye-bye.